in a war condition where somebody else may use them against you, and you don't want to, you may be in a race for a war, with a war, but you proceed to do, explore what nature is saying, and what can be done, what can't be done, and you try, and you make the measurements. To say that we have not made nature do this, it would be like saying to when you've had a bad winter at the end of the winter to a weatherman, don't you feel guilty for the lousy winter you produced? I mean, it isn't his fault, and we did not make nature. All right, we're studying it.
Yes, I agree completely with Al's analysis. At the end of the war, in fact, as soon as we could be free to talk, however, we as scientists took the view that we had an obligation because we knew the danger of the weapon. Our obligation was to inform the public as broadly and as extensively as possible about the dangers and what it meant to enter the new world. And that's not a matter of feeling guilty. That's a matter of an obligation. And I think that obligation still is there. You'll find that the scientific community, and I'm treating this in the broadest sense, scientists, engineers, and now in the last years, the physicians and surgeons have come into this.
And the educators, now a new group called Educators for Social Responsibility.
Good. Yeah, finally, 40 years later or whatever, it's all coming together now. This was the first move at Chicago right after the war.
By the way, it's in Chicago. The last couple of weeks, I slip in Harlow Shapley's voice that will fit exactly what you're saying. It was in Chicago. I think in references made to Los Alamos and others saying those Chicago people seem more worried than the others. You know, it was right here where the moral issue was really first raised, wasn't it?
Well, I think survival issue. I think it was alert and alive everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think that Chicago got its act together, and knew what they wanted to do about it, and went ahead and formed the Atomic Scientists of Chicago.
Yeah. And so there is, way back, Szilard formed what, the Council for a Livable World.
That comes later. I think John and some of the other young scientists there played a leading role in forming the Atomic Scientists of Chicago first.
And, of course, I'm delighted also with, and the turnouts were full and very active at the three-day sessions here, some of the 40. Suppose we hear Shapley's voice and then perhaps postscripts on your part. This is a number of years ago, way back, 22, 23 years ago, after Hiroshima, of course, but Harlow Shapley had retired from Harvard and somebody was asking him questions, and we heard.
I've often wondered who would inherit the earth. We understand that the meek may inherit the earth, and of course that leaves us out. Will it be mammals, or will it be fish or insects? In wondering about the future, and without actually trying to make a horoscope of humanity or of life on the earth, I have just tried to list down sometimes what are the risks we suffer. What will eliminate man if he is eliminated from the surface of the earth? Will it be the sun running down or blowing up, either one of those, freezing man out or incinerating him? No, because the sun's a good steady star, and as you know, it's pretty well thermostated to run for, say, 10,000 million years at its present rate, so the sun isn't going to play out. How about stars colliding with us? No, they're too far apart. Collisions would happen too infrequently. Say, in the next 1,000 centuries, no chance of that. I mean, a very low chance. Well, how about the Earth getting out of its orbit and running away and freezing to death in empty space, or plunging into the sun and boiling up? No chance. We know from our celestial mechanics that the orbit of the Earth is constant and will stay just about put. And so I think we're safe from sun, from star, from Earth. So now, must I say, that it looks pretty safe on man for this future you talk about for the next 1,000 centuries? Yes, no. Because he had one deadly enemy that I didn't mention, an enemy that's at his throat and may succeed in returning him to the fossils and leaving life on the earth to the cockroaches and the kelp. You know what that enemy is, of course? That's man himself.
Oh, God, man. Get you, man. Oh, God, man. Get you. Oh, God, man. Get you. Will there be time to find salvation?
Will there be time to find salvation? And that was the title pretty much of your speech yesterday. So there still is time.
There is, but not much. And I think the fact that we've come 40 years is already a spectacular event. And when one looks back over it, much of that has been an accommodation with a society that we don't agree with, but they have their right to live, and I think we've learned to accommodate in various occasions. And what the fearful thing is, if we don't have wide communication in the nation and we don't have an understanding, there's where the hazards will be.
Dr. Wattenberg.
The fear that's in us now about possibly a nuclear war is overshadowing everything, and it is something we must straighten. We absolutely have to deal with. But there, and if we can deal with it, then I think we can look back also at some of the wonderful things that have come out of the fact that a chain reaction is possible, because it has also made possible many new things helping in medicine, biological things, and other fields of science and industry.
It's really a question, isn't it? If we orient toward life or toward death, it's what it really amounts to.
That's right. That's right. It's there are two ways of having equilibrium in this world. One is unstable and one's stable. And we've always been talking about equilibria that are unstable, and that's not going to help us, because a little push will put us over the edge.
This is an hour too quickly, of course. There's much more that John A. Simpson, Albert Wattenberg have to tell us, but in this hour you have an idea. They're two very, very gracious indeed to come down here this morning amidst of all their work. And so it's by way of reflecting on what happened 40 years ago yesterday behind the abandoned football fields of Stagg Field. And Robert Maynard Hutchins, then Chancellor, reputed to have said, we should never have given up football. But nonetheless, it is so. And there is science, and there are human values, too. And I'm happy to see two scientists who believe in human values, too, with me this morning. And thank you very much, Al and John, very much indeed.